I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit MemoriaPress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're often told that Jesus' first disciples, those 12 men, were fishermen, that they were uneducated from obscure places in Galilee, that, places that would hardly even make it onto a map. And yet I'm looking at a story here from Biblical Archaeology under the headline, Is This Unearthed Fishing Village the Birthplace of Three of Jesus' Apostles, namely Peter, Andrew, and Philip? We're going to talk about this discovery and what has been found, what it might mean for biblical archaeology. Joining us to do so on this Tuesday afternoon, Dr. Craig Evans, a regular guest, distinguished professor of Christian origins and dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
What does the Bible tell us about Bethsaida and its relationship to Peter, Andrew, and Philip?
Well, it explicitly states that these three disciples whom you've just named come from that city, Bethsaida. It also tells us Jesus performed a miracle or two in the vicinity of the city in Mark 8, for example. A blind man was healed there. But also, curiously enough, Jesus pronounces a woe on the cities of Chorazin, which is in Galilee, and Bethsaida, which actually is not. And I think that's an important point to make, Todd. Bethsaida was on the east side of the boundary. To the west was Galilee, and to the east was Bethsaida in Gaulonitis. And so the tetrarch that was the ruler over those three disciples was Philip, son of Herod the Great, not Antipas, the tetrarch of Galilee. And I think there's a real dynamic that goes on there. Bethsaida was slightly Gentilized, slightly Hellenized. It was not as devoutly Jewish or Orthodox, you might say, as Capernaum, which was in Galilee, where Jesus set up his headquarters. So there's a little bit of a dynamic, and if time permits, I'll say something about the archaeological evidence that relates to that.
So, based upon what you have read and seen, how certain are you, at least at this preliminary point, that they have that they're on the right track in finding Bethsaida, and how important of a discovery may this be?
Well, I think it's very important if we can confirm it, and I tilt very strongly in favor of the et tell location, which is what we're talking about. Bethsaida's up on a rocky precipice at the north end of the Sea of Galilee. The reason there are some skeptics who say, no, that can't be the right place, is that it's more than a mile to the water's edge. So how could that be a fishing village so far away from the edge of the water? Well, there's an explanation for that. There was an earthquake in the 4th century, probably the one in 363, that caused a landslide that actually dammed up the Jordan River. And it backed up like, the Hoover Dam or something, and then just exploded in a massive mudslide and rock slide. Tons and tons of debris flowed south and pushed the north shoreline almost a mile south. It's very flat. It's only a few feet above the actual water level, and you can see it today. And what impresses me is the Israel geological team did a survey, and they did core samples drilling down deep, and they confirmed, yes, this is not the original shoreline. It is from a landslide to the north, coming out of the Jordan in the way I just described. So I think that pretty well confirms it. Also, the archaeology in the area has found anchors, fish hooks, lead weights for the nets. And so I don't think there's much doubt that where Rami Arav, Richard Freund, and Carl Savage have been digging for 25 years is, in fact, biblical Bethsaida.
I'm looking at the pictures, both at ground level and aerial pictures, of the excavation site there at Bethsaida. And I'm wondering if you could interpret what is, it's difficult for a non-archaeologist to tell what they're looking at. What do they think that they have found there?
Well, of course, there are, yeah, what makes it complicated is you're not just looking at one period of time. You're not looking at Bethsaida, say, in the year 30. You're looking at Bethsaida all the way back to the Bronze Age. You're looking at it in a Hellenistic period of time, later in the Hasmonean, later in the Roman, and even beyond, right on past the time of Jesus into our era. So you're looking at four or five different time periods, different quadrants. The entire area has not been excavated, just some of it. From my point of view, of course, it's the time of Jesus that's critical. There's the search for the temple that was supposed to be built in honor of Augustus, Emperor Augustus's late wife, Livia. And that's a very crucial piece of evidence that's disputed. Have we found that temple or not? And so that's what's going on. So that's why it looks complicated. And you look at that and think, wow, well, no one of those places, you know, not no two of those places existed at the same time. And so we're laying bare a layer. It's like a tell. And you're getting a glimpse of different periods of time and different spots at that location.
They claim to have found a Roman-era bathhouse. I'd like you to explain why that's important. Potsherds and coins from the 1st to 3rd centuries. Why is a Roman-era bathhouse significant?
Well, a Roman-era bathhouse would, you know, show us that it's not just a sleepy little fishing village. And so you're not going to have a Roman bathhouse in a place that's a little hamlet. But it's a city, and we are in fact told that in the time of Jesus and his disciples from that particular city, it was upgraded by the tetrarch, the ruler, the governor, you might say, the prince, son of Herod. It was upgraded from village status to city status. And its name, in fact, was changed from the Jewish name, Bethsaida, meaning house of catching, presumably catching fish, was changed from Bethsaida to Julias, in name, in honor of Livia Julia, the emperor's widow. So it was a deliberate effort to Romanize the city. Josephus, the Jewish historian, tells us about it. And of course, when archaeologists find a Roman bathhouse, it would appear that, in fact, that did happen. Even though Philip died in the year 34, it looks like Bethsaida really was upgraded and turned into a Roman-style city, which for the Jewish people would have been very controversial.
There's also been, I believe, this year and last, says the story from Religion News Service, discovery of golden glass mosaics. They're saying perhaps a church floor. What would that be?
Well, that would be later. A church floor of that nature would suggest the Byzantine era, not an early Aramaic-speaking Jewish church, so to speak, but probably a later Byzantine church where most of the people likely spoke Greek, although some of them perhaps spoke Aramaic as well. And so that, again, shows us that we have different time periods. So we should never assume the archaeologists are finding stuff that all dated from the same generation, but can be centuries apart.
Could that also perhaps indicate that building a significant church there indicates that at least at the time, I think that would date to, say, the 8th century, people believed that this was the hometown of Peter, Andrew, and Philip?
Yes, it would indicate that, because at almost every site where we think that, like Capernaum, for example, but also in Nazareth and other locations where it is believed that Jesus was engaged in his ministry, or something important happened in his life or a life of a family member or a disciple, it's not at all surprising that in the Byzantine period, and perhaps I should say that means the late 4th century and beyond, chapels and churches and monuments were erected. And so I'm sure you're right. It would indicate that in the 8th century and probably much earlier, Byzantine Christians, Eastern Christians, mostly Greek-speaking, would have believed that indeed this is Bethsaida, the very village of Peter, Andrew, and Philip.
So in terms of kind of like 1 to 10, based upon what we know so far, what the archaeologists have found and how they're interpreting that data, how significant a find is this?
I'll tell you, I'll give you something that's relatively new. I published it only a year ago. It's being talked about. It could be very significant, and let me explain why. The Bethsaida's name was changed in the year 30. We know that from Josephus. Livia died in 29, and there was a movement in Rome to make her into a goddess. And the Tetrarch Philip, son of Herod, was not Jewish in his faith. He was very Hellenized, Romanized, I should say. And he wanted to support the move to turn her into a goddess, to divinize her. The Romans did that with their emperors. Augustus, her husband, of course, was the famous Caesar Augustus, and he was made into a god shortly after his death in the year 14. Well, she dies 15 years later, 29, and in the year 30, Josephus tells us, Philip announced that Bethsaida would be turned into a city. It would be given a new name, named after Livia Julia, be named Julius, and he would build a temple on top of its rocky precipice in honor of her as a goddess. Now, Todd, I can't believe this is a coincidence that that very year, Jesus says to Peter, when Peter confesses Jesus to be the Messiah, the Son of God, I can't believe it's a coincidence that Jesus said to him, "You are Peter," which means rock, of course, and Peter is from Bethsaida, and he says, "I will build on this Petra, on this stone, on this rocky foundation, my church, and the gates of hell," that is the very evil authorities, "will not prevail against it." I suspect Jesus is responding to this announcement that took place that very year that the hometown of Peter, Andrew, and Philip was going to be turned into a very secular city, a very Romanized city that would be centered around something that from a Jewish point of view is blasphemous, turning this woman into a goddess. And so what we might have in one of the most significant gospel passages, Matthew 16, Mark 8, where Jesus announces his intention to build his church, it might actually have been occasioned by this scandalous announcement about Bethsaida. So if I'm right on this and scholars and archaeologists are weighing in and talking about it, then that would make Bethsaida and the archaeological work there extremely important for understanding a key passage, a key moment in the life of Jesus.
Finally, then, we often focus on Jesus' time spent in Jerusalem because the Gospels sometimes focus there as well. But the majority of Jesus' ministry was up in this very region. How familiar would have the original occupants of this town, Bethsaida, been with the ministry and life of Jesus during his time?
I think they would have been very familiar. Jesus spent most of his time, it's like a triangle, Capernaum on the northwest shore, Bethsaida on the north shore, and in between, and then, of course, a bit to the west, out toward Chorazin and other villages. That was his main stomping ground. And if he had not been in Bethsaida, if he had not performed a number of miracles in and around Bethsaida, then I don't understand why he would have pronounced the woe. He says, "Woe to you, Chorazin, and woe to you, Bethsaida. If the mighty works done in your towns had been done in the towns, other cities," Jesus mentions, "that are notorious for their sin and described and condemned by prophets in the Old Testament, Had those miracles that I did in front of you been done in front of them long ago, they would have repented, but you did not. And so that would tell us, I think we should infer from that, that Jesus was extremely well known at Bethsaida. His three of his disciples were from that very village, upgraded to a city. He had performed miracles there. We know of two of them, the feeding of the 5,000, 4,000, and the feeding and the healing of the blind man, and probably other miracles. So yes, Jesus and his disciples would have been very well known, and the changing, the upgrading of that city into a Romanized city would have been very controversial. And I think we need to remember, Todd, that when Jesus made pronouncements, many times they had significant political ramifications.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You can purchase it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Evans, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will join us. We will be teaching a Sunday school lesson on Paul and Philemon, the whole book of Philemon, just some verses, a couple dozen verses, will be the subject with Tom Baker after this.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces. The LCMS ministry to the armed forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Who is the Holy Spirit? Will there be animals in heaven? How can parents raise Christian children in a hostile culture? This month, find faithful, Bible-based answers to tough theological questions when you subscribe to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine, The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness to get 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.